Good afternoon. My name is Tracy, and I will be your conference operator. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the webinar, Retaining Second-Year College Students with Targeted Interventions. I will now turn the call over to Dr. Beth Richter with Noel Levitz.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much, and thank you all for joining us today. Welcome to this webinar as we share our time together and focus on how to retain second-year college students with targeted interventions. The importance of this theme as a focal point in student success initiatives is apparent by the registration of nearly 400 individuals for today's event, representing over 280 colleges and universities from throughout the United States and into Canada. Today, I'm joined by my trusted colleague, Joe Hillman, and campus leaders who are generously sharing their programs with us, namely Dr. Katie Busby of Tulane University, and also Dr. John Brooks of Fayetteville State University with his two colleagues, Zelfia Hinnant-Jones and Mr. Amin Abduk-Kalik. Thank you in advance to each of these featured speakers. Glancing through the agenda for today's session, initially, Joe Hillman and I would like to share some brief introductory thoughts, and thereafter, we'll delve into those case studies from our colleagues at Fayetteville State University and Tulane University, respectively. Here, as we pause to reflect upon second-year students, we recall instances of providing guidance to individuals in their distinctive academic journeys. We recognize that the rugged academic terrain is characterized by many highs and lows that may challenge a student's resiliency as he or she transitions to that second year of college and beyond. Though we acknowledge that students have already learned the lay of the land during the initial adjustment to college, those who persist face challenges, be they academic or personal, social or financial, for the duration of that first year. And then in the second year, as fellow educators, our attention shifts to helping students sustain the momentum toward their goals, withstanding struggles and blocking out those diversions in their ascent towards graduation. In this journey, we inquire, where are you losing your students? In the first year, is the departure occurring most often from term to term, or perhaps between the first year or the second year? Comparably, in the second year, is your student attrition most evident between term one and term two, or are your students more likely to pursue greener pastures in the summer, choosing not to return for that third year of college? Coupling these findings with students' motivational data from our 2011 study of the attitudes of second-year college students, we recognize the disparity between second-year students' initial commitment to finishing college, with 95% indicating that they are strongly dedicated to finishing college no matter what obstacles get in their way, but juxtaposing that with the reality that a little more than 15% fail to persist to year three, or in the case of two-year colleges, to the second term of year two. So with this realization in mind, I want to take a moment to first of all thank all of you who took some time to complete our short survey last week, sharing your current situation and thinking about the context for strategies to serve second-year students. 69% of you all who responded have special initiatives in place for second-year students already, and 23% of you are planning to implement special initiatives yet this fall, whereas 7% are in the very early stages of thinking about second-year initiatives. We inquired, what is the greatest challenge in implementing an initiative for second-year students? In response, today's group acknowledged lack of funding, lack of information about students' needs, and limited time as difficulties to overcome in implementing a focused initiative for second-year college students. Further, you noted that currently your initiatives take the form of extending and adapting that first-year program or cultures for second-year students, and a number of you indicated that you plan a series of workshops for second-year students. As it relates to the responsibility for second-year student initiatives, the majority of you consider second-year programs a shared responsibility between affairs, though in some cases, either student affairs or academic affairs will take the lead with emphases related to second-year students. In this context, we have developed the second-year student assessment here at Noel Levitz, and we did so based on our awareness of the recurrent themes that many of you, especially those of you involved in the pilot study in 2010, voiced to us and is put forth in the literature. Academically, it's apparent that students can become overwhelmed when they begin to struggle with declining academic performance in the second year of college. And we recognize that there can be a certain lack of integration, perhaps an initial disconnect on some level, between the key areas of advising and career planning. Financially, I'm sure that many of us witness cases of the family's financial situation influencing the student's weighing of the value and feasibility of attending college. And on the matter of personal as well as social fronts, relationships can develop certain complexities that preoccupy or maybe even confuse our students in that second year of college. So with you reflecting on these dimensions of the second year experience, we sought to incorporate these different aspects into our motivational assessment, addressing academic realms, personal concerns, financial matters, career planning, and advising needs. Now exploring this further, my colleague Joe Hillman will now discuss this context in relation to the second year student assessment. Joe?
Thank you, Beth. The transition alerts that Beth referenced earlier focus on needs of incoming students those first few weeks of college, as well as those same students after they've had a few weeks or months of actual experience taking courses at your institution. Extending services to students as they transition to the second year of college serves as an effective means of further strengthening students' success initiatives. Our three motivational assessments are shown here, the college student inventory, the mid-year student assessment, and the second year, designed to support and inform your campus work with students at these three critical junctures. Our national data sets compiled from these two motivational assessments provide insights related to the motivations of first-year and second-year students. Here you see our 2012 National Freshman Attitudes Report with over 90,000 records of students who completed the College Student Inventory Form B in 2011. The other report, the National Study on the Attitudes of Second-Year College Students, reports findings from over 8,600 second-year students who participated in our pilot study in 2010. Both of these reports are available on our website for your download, and we'll be citing some of the statistics as we proceed here today. The information is included in the report as gathered on the assessment. There are 68 items that are included, and just to give a little further background on these, in terms of the kinds of information that's gathered, you see some basic demographic information of the student as well as the motivations, the study plans, the insights into the individual degree being sought. Here you see the scales as broken down. Again, the items within the survey assessment form the scales. They are broken down by academic motivation, social motivation, and coping. And as you see here, when the student receives their report, it gives them a capsulized picture of how they are ranking, their scores, and how it relates to them specifically. An important part of the assessment is receptivity to assistance. Students take advantage of services in their first year and on the survey in regard to academics, advising, career counseling, financial guidance, and personal support and counseling. And then importantly, they report whether they are interested in having assistance during their second year. This really provides campuses with that opportunity to intervene and provide that necessary assistance. The institutional impressions are collected. Students rate several areas on a scale of 1 being low to 7 being high. That helps to round out the understanding of the individual as well as provide an opportunity for campuses to work on areas that may need focus. The sample report you see here is the advisor-counselor report. It includes details that are not found in the student report, allowing campus staff, again, some additional insight into that individual. Scores for the individual items are shown. Our presenters today will be defining some of these items and sharing with you how they use that data to provide support for students' success. This overview shows the relationship of the scales as categorized by student academics with attention to their motivations, needs, interests, and institutional impressions, for instance, as well as the student background information. Altogether, this information helps to inform our understanding of the students we seek to serve collectively as we connect them with key resources on campus, ultimately ensuring that students move forward with their progress toward completion. This second page of the overview shows the correlation of the scales, the items, and interpreting the data, specifically by considering, number one, that student information, the motivational assessment, and then the receptivity regarding needs and interests, as well as the institutional impressions, campus intervention and support is effectively focused. I'm now pleased to invite our Fayetteville State University presenters to share their success strategies. Dr. Brooks?
Thanks, Joe. And thanks as well for the opportunity to share the results of our use of the second year student assessment at Fayetteville State University. This is John Brooks, Dean of University College, which is the unit responsible for students from admission to successful declaration of major. Since it's often the second year before students at FSU declare their major, the second year is a significant part of our student success efforts. First, a bit about FSU. We were established in 1867 for the education of African Americans, and although we're more significantly more diverse now, we retain a predominantly African American student population. We're a Master's I comprehensive institution that is part of the University of North Carolina system. We have about 5,500 undergraduates. The profile of entering freshmen is suggested by two numbers. Our average SAT is low, and our percentage of Pell-eligible students is high. We serve a population that is marginally prepared academically and highly challenged economically. That profile is reflected in our retention and graduation rates. The UNC system has an official goal of 80% one-year retention, 30% four-year graduation, and 50% six-year graduation. On average, system schools meet that goal. However, that average hides significant disparities. Because of the population we serve, UNC FSU's lag behind the rest of the system, which serves students who are better prepared academically and better resourced economically. FSU's one-year retention rate is comparable to other UNC HBCUs and to our national peers. However, our 4- and 6-year graduation rates are lower. This raises the question, what's going on after the first year? When Noel Levitz approached us about piloting the second-year student assessment, it seemed like a great way to help us learn more about the factors affecting student success after the first year. Enrollment, who either entered as first-time freshmen or who were transfer students with 60 hours or fewer. We've administered the survey twice, in fall 2010, fall 2011. We administered it online by sending email invitations. We had a great response the first year when we offered the incentive of an Amazon gift card. We had less success the second year without an incentive. Note, incentives work. I'm now going to turn the presentation over to Amin Abdulkhalik, our retention data specialist. Amin will tell us about the results.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks, and thanks for the opportunity to participate with you and share what we have gathered from the most previous administration of our second-year student assessment. I am primarily responsible for the setup and administration of the second-year student assessment, as well as the College Student Inventory Form B and the Mid-Year Student Motivational Assessment at our campus. On this slide, you see our Retention Management System Plus Retention Data Center. This is the site that I use. It's a secure, password-protected website that allows me to set up, monitor, and retrieve the summary results of our second-year student assessment administration. I'm going to look at one scale, the academic motivation scale, as it relates to commitment to college, academic confidence, and engaged learning. The table in the upper right-hand side of the slide shows our second-year students report higher educational aspirations. In addition, the items from the scale in the lower portion of the slide indicate that our students place a higher value on education and its long-term benefits. In the area of academic confidence, the top table displays our students realize they need to study harder in the second year, and the bottom table is interpreted as our students having lower academic confidence. Area of engaged learning, our students report overall being slightly more engaged. Now let's turn our attention to institutional impressions. We examine institutional impressions of our students to look at their level of satisfaction in the various areas of student advising, student academics, student leadership, student finances, etc. We're surprised by some of these impressions, but not so by others. For example, we were surprised by our students' higher satisfaction with adequacy of financial assistance, because many of our students report anecdotally dissatisfaction with our financial aid office. However, we are pleased to know efforts to improve our first-year programs have borne fruit, reflected by our second-year students' higher satisfaction in the areas of academic advising, leadership, opportunities, and sense of belonging, to name a few. The column on the right lets us know we have more work to do to improve in those specified areas. By assessing receptivity to assistance, the student needs and interest component provides the ability for directed action in the areas of academic assistance, advising, career counseling, financial guidance, and personal support and counseling. As you can see from the table on receptivity to help, our programs provided more assistance in the first year to our students than first-year students from the National Comparison Group. And they continue to want assistance at a high level in the second year. We found the responses from the students' needs and inventory, students' needs and interests from our summary and planning report provided us the data we need to prioritize our student needs, as you can see from the table.
Our students have a strong commitment to completing college and high degree aspiration, but they have relatively low confidence in their ability to succeed. This suggested the need for increasing second-year academic support, as well as more intensive support for especially at-risk students. Our students indicated high satisfaction with advisement, but we know from other data that relatively few of them declare majors. This suggested a better connection was needed of students to majors and more career counseling. Students indicated a surprisingly high degree of satisfaction with financial assistance, but we know that their finances are weak. Finally, students indicated a receptivity to counseling, but they also indicated relatively low family support. That suggested a need for more counseling services. These paradoxes suggested several implications. We know our programs are good, and students appreciate them. However, student need is greater than our programs can address. When you serve disadvantaged students, good is not good enough. Programs and services must be world class. We didn't find a silver bullet, a single issue that would solve all of our second-year challenges. Students' issues are multifaceted, and we need to address them with a holistic approach. Since we don't have the resources to do all things for all students, we focused on developing holistic programs for targeted populations. Zelfia Hennett-Jones, coordinator for second-year initiatives at FSU, will tell you about some of these programs.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. Several of the programs where we incorporated the findings. The first one being the Bronco Men's Summer Program. This program was for students transferring from the community colleges and second-year males. The Bronco Men's Summer Program had a residential component, which promoted a sense of community, easier access to students, and an opportunity to bond. The academic needs were met by concentrating on completing core requirements during the summer session. We used tutoring and supplemental instructors were hired to meet the needs of the students. Daily study sessions were held in computer labs with access to tutors and SI leaders, as well as a residential setting for the evening study sessions. Early alerts allowed instructors to comment on student progress and in turn allowed for a follow-up with advisor and student to address any academic needs. Academic advising was done with weekly meetings to discuss academics, degree evaluations, major declaration, or academic improvements. Community service was done at a local educational fishing facility where the students volunteered to help youth learn fishing techniques. It was an enjoyable experience for them. Career counseling was a collaboration with Career Services as they provided weekly workshops for students to include resume writing, networking, and interviewing skills. And, of course, this was a tuition, room, and board paid experience. And it was mainly comprised of students with academic standing of probation or suspension. We started with an academic success plan addressing their academic strengths and weaknesses or areas for improvement. We looked at their current GPA along with any academic resources that were available to assist them in raising their GPA. The Learning Lab allowed structured time for students to take advantage of academic resources such as the Writing Lab, the Math Lab, and supplemental instruction. Study skills workshops were set up 2 weeks out from midterm and final exams to refresh study methods and address academic difficulties. This was also open to all second-year students. Our life labs allowed for the personal counseling that the students addressed they needed, and it also allowed them to address issues that distract from academic success, especially for many first-generation students. Goal setting stemmed from the academic success plan to include academic, personal, and career goals, and each step needed to attain these goals. A refresher on the use of good time management tools and which ones work best for the individuals were discussed and also put to use. Students found a 14-credit hour limit, student success class completion, and repeating failed courses per their advisor. So it has been a successful program.
Thanks, Sylvia. In addition to new second-year programs, we've also tried to improve our first-year programs. If we can reduce the number of students who enter the second year at risk, we can improve graduation rates. That's one reason why this past year we embarked on what we called FYI 2.0. This was a concerted and coordinated effort between academic affairs and student affairs to improve the first-year experience. We built required academic support and co-curricular engagement into our Learning Communities program. We introduced a co-curricular transcript to encourage students to become more engaged. We strengthened our major and career activities in the first year to get more students to declare a major by the end of the first year. Among the innovations was the introduction of pre-majors in selected programs, especially those with significant admission requirements such as nursing, business, and education. Students who declare a pre-major are not admitted to the program. However, they do receive an advisor in the program who can help them navigate the requirements to become eligible. So the second-year student assessment at FSU has helped us clarify needs and craft solutions for second-year students. It really filled in a gap for us. We also like the fact that the second-year student assessment is coordinated and consistent with the other Noel Levitz products we use, the College Student Inventory and the Mid-Year Student Assessment. This allows us to review student attitudes from the time they enter college through the beginning of the second year. Feel free to contact us if you have any questions about our programs or our use of the second year student assessment. I would now like to turn the program over to our colleague at Tulane University, Dr. Katie Busby.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. I appreciate that. Here at Tulane University, we have had an effort somewhat similar to what you've heard from my colleagues at Fayetteville State, where we're making concerted efforts to engage with our second-year students and help with their retention and persistence at the institution. And we wanted to do this in a way that was integrated with our current programming and more than what we say here in South Louisiana, more than just a little bit of lanyap or a little something extra. To give you a little information about Tulane University, we are located in New Orleans, Louisiana, and are a traditional, largely traditional campus with a four-year experience. We do have some non-traditional students, but that population is very small in relation to the undergraduate total population. We have about a little over 13,000 students total. That includes our undergraduates as well as our graduate and professional students. We are a selective independent research institution and have a strong commitment to research as well as a strong commitment to community engagement and public service. Part of that commitment to public service has always been a part of Tulane University, but as you all well know, a lot of that changed in 2005 following Hurricane Katrina. We really did solidify the commitment to the community engagement and public service following that time. And one of the things that we noticed was a real change in our students following the storm. We did notice that students had a desire to make a difference in the community and expressed a desire for more engaging experiences. We noticed this through their applications, their essays, as well as student survey data. Some of the current practices that we have at Tulane were either instituted immediately after the storm or were in place prior to the storm but became solidified in the curriculum of 2006. A couple of those practices include the high-impact practices of freshman seminars and capstone courses, as well as a two-tiered service learning or public service graduation requirement that we've had for about the past 6 years. We do require that our first and second year students live on campus as well. So we know that these are a lot of the good things that are taking place, and these are practices that will help retain our students and make a difference in their experience. Of course, some of the other initiatives that we have include undergraduate research, internships within the community, and collaboration among students in their projects. Well, we know that those practices are working. We have seen an increase in our retention rates following the pre-Katrina average of around the mid-80s. We've jumped up to the low 90s and have been consistently there. However, we want to do a little bit better. I know that our retention rate is something that we're proud of, and a lot of folks would have really liked to have this type of retention rate, but we are looking to continue to increase that as well, always looking to do a little bit better. So about a year ago, we recognized that there were some opportunities for us to really make a difference, both with our first-year students as well as our second-year students. And like Fayetteville State, we are using a number of the Noel Levitt's tools, including the college student inventory, the mid-year student assessment, as well as the second-year student assessment. So we engaged in those endeavors to administer the surveys and examine the data and then use that information to improve our programs and services. The group that we organized sounds, I guess, somewhat similar to what folks responded in the survey when asking who's responsible for these efforts, because we included staff from both student affairs and academic affairs. So we have our admissions officers, registrar from enrollment management, dean of the undergraduate college, which is our Newcomb Tulane College, as well as representatives from academic advising and career and the Career Center, as well as student affairs, technology services, and then I serve in an institutional assessment. So we're really pleased to have the right folks at the table to be able to address these issues. I think, as some of you indicated in the survey, that we're still learning some of this. We are implementing some new initiatives in the fall, and we'll see how they go. And then we're also trying to adapt some of the existing programs that we have for our first-year students into the second year. So we're still making meaning of some of the data and looking forward to the projects that we have this fall. As we administered the second-year student assessment, one of the things that we spent a fair amount of time on and a fair amount of effort is to utilize the customization features. With the instrument, you are allowed to include some customized questions and then some messaging techniques that are customized to the students. And we did that and felt like that was a good step to take and made a difference in the administration helping with our response rate. Much like Fayetteville State, we offered some Amazon gift cards, although I don't think we did as well as you did. We had about a 40% response rate. I think you were a little bit higher than we were with those incentives. Certainly, it does take a lot of work, but as my colleague mentioned, the incentives do work to help students to encourage them to respond. One of the other things that we did with the second-year student assessment, as it turned out, we had some data both from two different national surveys that were taken in the first year, and so we were able to pair the institutional data that we had from these students' first year along with the second-year student assessment and to take a look at that information together. So that was quite beneficial to us as we tried to make meaning of what the student experience was. So what did the data tell us? One of the things that we learned is that although we offer our students a variety of opportunities to explore academic majors, to explore engagement in the community, co-curricular learning opportunities such as internships and externships, that our sophomores were less committed than their peers to a particular major. So they have a lot of choices. We give them a lot of opportunity to experiment and find their way, but perhaps they may need a little bit more structure, that they need a little bit more assistance in committing to a particular academic program or to a major. And I think that's one of the things, as pointed out in the literature, that there can be that disconnect. As you saw previously, I just wanted to show you here a little bit of what the actual report would look like. So this is a component of our summary and planning report, again, showing that our students are less likely to continue with the major that they have selected than their peers. So some of the strategies that we want to use to address this is to ensure that we continue to balance the experiential opportunities with academic and career decision making. So again, to try to help the students firm up their decisions to enjoy those experiences, but then also take and use those experiences to establish some plans or goals related to their academics and to their career. We also want to provide some additional mentoring in terms of career mentoring as well as their academic major and engage a little bit more with their faculty and their advisors. And that was something that we realized our second year students were less satisfied than their peers. They wanted more interaction with instructors. They wanted more variety with their courses and then involvement with their major. So again, those opportunities for co-curricular learning, but to focus it with a major. That's something that we really saw come through in the data. Again, you've seen these similar screenshots with the reports, so you have a sense of the factors and the scales that are available to examine when looking at this information. In terms of advising, our Tulane sophomores did not receive, or maybe they did not seek, that's something that we want to find out a little bit more about, opportunities to engage with their advisor in their first year. But they certainly are receptive and want to do that in their second year. So we're trying to find some more opportunities for them to be able to do that. And I think similar to the Fayetteville State students, that idea of being receptive and open in their second year to that advising. So again, we want to help our students engage with their advisors, engage with the career coaches, and then also to promote student health services. Our students did seem to be receptive to counseling, which is a good thing. If they are feeling the stress or need some assistance in transition, we want those services to be available to our students. And some of the other scales that are present in the second year student assessment, particularly in finances and leadership, we did find that Tulane students were very similar to their peers in terms of leadership. They didn't look too different from anyone else. So we want to continue with that programming. We certainly can look at that and improve that as well, but they seem to be satisfied with that component of their experience. Similarly, with the financial component, students do have a sense of financial security, but as we know in these difficult times, that finance is a concern for all, including our students, and particularly because we are a private institution, it can be a greater concern. But thankfully, our students do seem comfortable with their ability to continue, and that finance may not prevent them from continuing on in their career. Again, similarly, what we want to do to address any of these needs is to engage with our financial aid officers and then continue to provide the co-curricular leadership and experiential opportunities, and to the extent that we can, to ensure that those are related to the major. A couple of the things that we plan to do in the upcoming year is to develop some additional programming based on these students' needs and instituted a career coaching program. We think this will be particularly important as the students are developing their majors and are interested in setting some career goals. One of the other opportunities that we have, and this is geared a little bit more toward our first-year students, but with an eye of possibly expanding this to the second-year students in the future, is piloting learning communities. That's currently one of the high-impact practices that we do not have at Tulane, but want to begin. So we're looking forward to a small pilot that's coming to our campus this fall. To give you just a wrap-up of what we've done here, there have been a lot of changes on our campus, student-related changes, since 2006, about 6 or almost 7 years ago. And because of these changes, we know that they're making a difference, but we want to be a little bit more purposeful about the programming that we have. The assessments that we have conducted have provided us with a lot of information, a lot of data to guide that decision-making process, and we're glad to have the opportunity to be able to use that information, institute some new programs, to change some other programs, and hopefully make a difference in the lives of our students. And I think now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Beth Richter. Beth, if you want to take us from here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Busby, and thank you so much, colleagues from Fayetteville State University. These case studies are just fascinating, aren't they? Please stay with us because what we're going to do is I just want to share a little research with you here, and then we're going to ask just a few questions of you all on the phone, and then we're going to open the lines for you all to ask your questions of these gifted case study speakers. So initially, I just want to, you know, take a moment here. We've shared with you 5 themes for student success in the second year and how we incorporated these 5 themes into the second year student assessment. And you've just heard 2 outstanding case studies from campuses that have used these findings from the assessment to inform their strategic initiatives for second year students. And in just a few minutes, you can pose your questions to them. But before we enter into that phase of the webinar, I want to just briefly conclude, if I could, by sharing some of our research findings that suggest potential retention and course completion risk factors for your second year students. Now, this list you see here, it's not intended to be comprehensive. We just wanted to provide you with some additional insights into the areas of risk that were seen in the national data. In the first column, you'll see 5 major themes that we've alluded to previously here today. We have that academic realm and advising related, social and personal relationships, finances, career planning. And in that second column here, we see identified retention risk factors by theme, which help to explain the second to third year persistence of students at 4-year institutions and graduation for students at 2-year institutions. So here in this second column, we see low scores on engaged learning, academic confidence, and low satisfaction by students in their interaction with instructors. Those are some of the strongest academic risk indicators. And then as it relates to advising risk indicators, a student's low satisfaction with communication with his or her advisor and wanting to discuss transfer questions or issues and having fewer than 15 credit hours or more than 60 credit hours earned, these are advising risk factors. As we look in the social and personal realm, there the stronger risk factors at 4-year institutions are in these areas, and for the 2-year institutions, the low receptivity to financial assistance was a stronger risk predictor for those 2-year institutions. And that important area of career counseling, low satisfaction with service learning opportunities and wanting work experiences related to the major were especially strong risk indicators for students at 4-year private institutions. Now, as we go over to that third column, we add course completion risk factors. And by this, we mean the student's completion of 75% of courses attempted during the second year as a dependent variable. receiving and wanting tutoring, as well as low commitment to college, were academic risk indicators for students at four-year institutions, while wanting to discuss transfer issues was an advising risk factor for these students. And low family support and low financial security were risk flags for students at two-year institutions. Further, those who received no help with their career choice had lower course completion rates as well. So at this point, I just want to turn the program over to my colleague, Joe Hillman, who has a few questions of each of you. Joe?
Thank you, Beth. I'd like to pose three very brief questions so that we can provide timely follow-up that you may request. The first question here, you can see the opportunity to indicate your response to the question. I would like a phone conversation to learn more about using these motivational assessments with our students. So I'll give you just a moment as you respond to the question, either yes, contact me, no, not at this time, but we would keep you on our mailing contact list if you'd like. And then that third option, we don't have an interest at this time. Give you just a moment here for responses. Okay, thank you so much. And then moving to our second question, I am interested in receiving an access code to take the second-year student assessment. This would provide a hands-on experience, what your students would see if they were to take this instrument, and you'll get a report that's generated like the report for your students. So again, just a moment here to compile the results. And then quickly moving on to that third and final question, this allows you to receive an access code to take the college student inventory, and that's that first year assessment that freshmen would take as they come into campus. Please indicate if you'd like that opportunity. We send you a link, you go into a secure site and enter your responses to complete that survey assessment. All right. Thank you so much. And if I've moved the polling questions too quickly, you didn't get your response in here, you can always contact us by email, and we'll be happy to get some follow-up going for you. Additionally, our phone numbers will be included at the end here, so wanting to have those ongoing conversations. I'll turn the program back to Beth then.
All right, wonderful. Thanks so much, Joe, and thanks mostly to each of you on the phone here with us today. At this point, Tracy, our operator, is going to just instruct you all on how you can ask your questions of our featured case study presenters. Tracy?
If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And your first question comes from the line of Tricia Nolan with Presbyterian College. Your line is open.
Yes, Tricia.
I have a question. We also are a small school, which I was glad to see that the schools that you used are also small. One of our difficulties seems to be offering enough majors and variety in the majors, and I saw that that is part of the assessment you offer. But what I'd like to ask the colleges themselves, what were some of the interventions that they do to either offer more or help their students be satisfied despite the fact that they are smaller and can only offer some things?
Dr. Brooks, do you want to get us started there with your team?
Well, that is a great question because we do have limits on the number of different majors we can offer. One of the things that departments have done is increase the number of concentrations within existing majors so that, for example, within business administration, we've added healthcare administration as a concentration within business administration. Administration. And so that enables us to differentiate our curriculum in more than the just a business administration major would allow. So we have been able to differentiate our curriculum there. We've also introduced a forensic science major that uses existing biology and chemistry instructors. So I think that's one thing. But I think Zelfia referred to getting students in touch with career services, because that can also help students understand that they can do a lot of things with the majors that we have that they might not have thought of. So you know, I think both working on the curriculum within the constraints that you have to differentiate it more, and then really getting students to work with career services to clarify what it is that they can do with their majors. Those are a couple of strategies that we've used and I think could help.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Ledowitz with Notre Dame of Maryland. Your line is now open.
Yes, I'm curious at Tulane what the career coaching program is in the career services department.
Well, the career coaching is similar to advising in some ways, but these are individuals, advisors, as we're calling them, coaches, who are really working with the students on a one-on-one basis to help them identify what it is that they are interested in doing, what are the opportunities that are available to them, and then what are the skills that they will need to be successful in that field. So it is helping them to design some, I say a program, but it's a program of study that extends beyond just the academic major to include other experiences that would help prepare a student for a particular field, or to help them investigate what fields might be best suited to their talents and to their skills. So it really is kind of a specialized advising in some ways. And the career coaches are relatively new. It is a new program, so we'll be doing some assessment to see how that's working for our students.
Thank you.
Thank you. In light of the two questions that were career related, I pulled up from the student report this career planning aspect under the needs and interests section of the report, and I just got this at our website, noellevitz.com/second-year. And I wanted to point out over to the right where it says potential sources of assistance on this report, that's actually would be your customized text if you would choose to use this instrument. That's where you could speak specifically to your career services or your academic services or your advising or financial or personal support services. So I just wanted to point that out for our group. Tracy, can you please guide us towards the next question that might be in the queue?
Your next question comes from the line of Monica Williams with University of South Carolina. Your line is open.
Hi, we had a question about the men's program at FSU, and how did y'all pay for that?
Oh, that's a great question and an ongoing struggle. We did have a grant from the University of North Carolina General Administration for that program, and we're currently seeking follow-up funding for a continuation program. So that one was through grantsmanship and an opportunity. The Students of Promise program, the benefit of that is that it didn't cost us anything except blood, sweat, and tears. We had the existing resources already.
Your next question comes from the line of Joan Ledbetter with Georgia Highlands. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for doing this. I was just wondering, and I could have missed it because I couldn't sign on at the very beginning, did you talk about any specific career courses, credit courses for career planning?
This is Tulane. We did not, and we don't have any such courses. We have a freshman seminar, but it's not
necessarily study skills or career related. It's not specific for that. It's a little bit more broad and allows students to become more engaged with their faculty members. So there's no specific course for career planning. We do have some seminars in the School of Business related to that, but not broadly across the institution.
Now that's a great suggestion. We probably have at Fayetteville State more in the way of career planning because we realize how important it is for our student success to focus early on a career goal. So we've worked very closely with Career Services to incorporate it throughout the freshman seminar, and Fayetteville State is a little bit unusual in that we have a two-semester first-year seminar, so it goes into the spring semester as well. So I think that's one of the things. One of the other things that we have done is we've started focusing our first-year learning communities program around pre-majors. So we have learning communities in business and pre-nursing and education and criminal justice and many of the areas that students are interested in or think they might be interested in. And so we're hoping to use both of those as both the freshman seminar and the learning communities of which the freshman seminar is a part to help our students focus early and get the assistance that they need in the first year to start focusing on some career goals.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just interjecting, now I know that St. Francis College in New York, Monica Michalski, has a special course in career planning. Whether it's a credit course or not, I'm not sure, but I do have a write-up of her program that she allows us to share. You also might want to be aware of Amy Moss at University of Michigan Flint. They have this Passport program. I know that there's a nice My Plans co-curricular program at SUNY Oswego. So these colleagues, just like these generous colleagues today, have allowed us to feature these case studies. So also these individuals in different forums in the past that I could share with any of you if of interest.
Your next question comes from the line of Connie Cuyer with University of Toronto. Your line is open.
Yes, we'd be interested in hearing more about your learning communities and how they function.
At Tulane, I somewhat want to defer a little bit. Ask me in a year. We have right now a very small pilot that will be beginning in the fall. So we're hopeful but uncertain about what that will bring. We have limited this learning community to strictly a learning community. As you know, a number of institutions have learning and living communities and combine the living aspect. We chose not to do that at this time, but are open to doing that in the future. Again, we just wanted to keep it small and simple at the beginning. We are focusing this learning community in the sciences. The reason being, we have a number of students that come to Tulane that have an interest in either chemistry or physics with the hopes of going on to medical school. We also know that not everyone can get into medical school, that folks change their minds or find that it's quite difficult and quite competitive. So we have focused this learning community around students that are interested in the sciences, and we are making available opportunities for them to meet with faculty as well as other individuals that have careers in the sciences, so they can know that perhaps there's more to do with a physics degree than just going to medical school, for example. We also want them to be realistic about the expectations that they have for going to graduate or professional school, what is expected of them, what are the options, what other health-related professions might they be interested in addition to or instead of medical school if they choose not to apply to med school. So we're kind of focusing on that limited area and utilizing some of the faculty from the Tulane Medical School, from other industries, and departments in the New Orleans area. So that's the focus for the first pilot, and we'll see how that goes. And like I said, we're quite hopeful. It's a small group of about 30. I think it's about 35 students or so. We'll see how that plays out once all the registrations get in and the fall semester gets here.
Hi, this is John Brooks at Fayetteville State University. We've been doing learning communities for about 8 years now, and it's expanded from a small program in 2004 to the last 2 years, and going into this third year, we place nearly all of our entering freshmen into learning communities, somewhere between 80 and 85% of them. And in addition to that, actually, like Tulane learning communities, our campus, our entering freshmen are about 75% residential, but that's a quarter of our entering freshmen who aren't on campus. And so the academic learning community has been one way that we have tried to deal with that. On the other hand, Student Affairs came to us last year and said they wanted to organize orientation around learning communities, and they, by golly, did that. They organized their orientation groups for incoming students around the learning communities that they had signed up for, and that's been a real success. So we've had some good success with learning communities, and you know, we'd be happy to share more information about that program.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tamika White with Metropolitan Community College. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi. I work at a community college, and I'm wondering how you all are defining second-year students at the community college level.
Okay. Basically, you know, this came up, and thank you so much for this good question. We had a lot of, and some of the colleagues on the phone will smile with me, during the pilot mm-hmm. study in 2010, we had a lot of discussions about this, especially as we were trying to decide whether to call the assessment the sophomore assessment
right.
of the second year, and how do we define that. So we came up with kind of an amorphous, ambiguous definition, but we're thinking of those students who are not receiving services, you know, who are not part of that first-year initiative set of services. They're not the recipients of those. So they're no longer getting those special touches that we give to first-year students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of broadly categorizing it in that way, and I encourage any of my colleagues who might be on the phone with us to be a little more fine-grained about that. But that is my interpretation of the second year, a pretty broad sweep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, please share your reflective comments as well. And excuse me, Dr. Brooks, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was just going to say, I can't speak to the community college definition, but I know that we were instrumental in pushing for calling this the second-year student assessment rather than the sophomore student assessment, because most of our second-year students are not sophomores.
Right.
We have students for a variety of reasons, whether because they struggle academically or
mm-hmm.
because they're working adults. We have a large non-traditional population, but at any rate, they haven't accumulated 30 earned hours by the time
right.
they were for the second year. So, but we wanted to make sure, I mean, that those people were included in the definition, and so the more expansive phrase second year allows us to include sophomores, but it also addresses the needs of these other students. And as I mentioned earlier, we basically define it as third semester of enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And something you could probably use at college as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Helpful. That's a helpful, you know, and also we think that there's applicability of this assessment for transfer students. I know that Calvin College,
mm-hmm.
for instance, has tried this with their transfer students, of course, a four-year institution in that case. But
mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. White, for that good question. And what I'm hoping is that
we can just kind of continue this dialogue among us as well. We have a few more questions yet today, but I think having this national dialogue together is so helpful as we all kind of put our head, our minds, and our arms around this population. And I mentioned earlier that I have, due to the generosity of spirit of other colleagues around the country, I do have some of these case studies on file in addition to these strong ones today. I'd be more than happy to share if any of you want to email me about that. Any other questions, Tracy, in that queue there?
Your next question comes from the line of Lauren Young with the University of Buffalo. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for the program you offered this afternoon. A question about the leadership team in each of the organizations featured this afternoon. Can you talk about how you organize the leadership team that's responsible for designing and implementing and evaluating the success of your program? And what are some of the most important considerations in launching such a leadership team in the institution that you found to be successful?
That's an exciting question, and I'm going to ask, Katie, would you start us off on that one and share how that worked at Tulane University?
Oh, certainly, gladly. As you saw, our working group, we don't call ourselves a committee or anything like that. We working group is probably the best title for us. We were accidentally purposeful, I guess is the best way to say that, in terms of involving the right players. We felt that enrollment management was very important. They're, of course, bringing in the students and want us to retain those students as well. So we have the enrollment management, admissions, and the registrar's office. Of course, registrar's office is important because we want to ensure that we have the right courses available to the students so that they can select their majors and excel in their coursework. We do have an undergraduate college, and that's Newcomb-Tulane College. So we have several representatives from the undergraduate college. This is an important component. So we have the dean of the college is represented on the committee, and our academic advising and career services units are within the college as well. And we have representatives from both of those units. So we have academic advisors as well as one of the career coaches, and then the director of those centers as well. Student affairs, obviously we do a lot of programming with our students, so our vice president of student affairs is involved with this working group also. Technology services, we have a representative from technology services to ensure that if there's anything that we want to do, whether it's with course enrollment or, for example, pairing the students in the learning communities or ensuring that we have the right mix of classes for our students, we need to work with that through our student enrollment system or student information system. We have somebody from technology services there to help us to be sure that we don't run into any implementation bumps that way. I came to this group through, I serve in academic affairs and came to this group because of my involvement with assessment. And of course, looking at the data, examining the data, ensuring that we're using that information to make a difference in our programs. That's where I really come from. And I think we have a good working group. As I said, we're a little bit purposeful but accidental in the same way. We meet regularly. Depending on the schedule, sometimes it's weekly, sometimes it's every other week. But we do maintain good communication and a good working relationship.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And Dr. Brooks, can you share for your team as well how this has evolved?
Well, we've gone through a number of iterations of retention councils and this, that, and the other. I think one of the key things that we have done at Fayetteville State is approach it systematically, starting with our strategic plan. Our number one strategic priority is retention and graduation rates, and we've used a fairly robust operational planning process that falls under that strategic plan. And so every unit has to demonstrate how it addresses retention and graduation rates. And so that has led a lot of units to get involved in retention, or to realize that they were already involved in retention, they just didn't call it that. And so I think where we are now is that we've proliferated a lot of initiatives, and now we need to sort of pull them out and see where they are and where they need to go. And the university has in the last few months created a new position, an assistant vice chancellor for retention, and hired somebody to fulfill that task. And so I'm going to be working as Dean of University College, and my folks are going to be working with that person, who will also be working with Student Affairs to try to pull out the retention piece, because what we're finding now is that, you know, we have a whole lot of things going on. Now we need to coordinate them better. But I would still say that systematic planning plus operational planning process, which is assessment built into it, is starting to yield real results for us, I think.
Thank you so kindly. And here I've just, you know, reminded us of Mr. Abdu-Khalid's slide, one of them, which is an excerpt from the summary and planning report. And it's not uncommon for me to receive questions as people are thinking about the second year and the second year student assessment, and kind of that, a chicken and an egg situation, where do you need the program before you do the assessment? Can the assessment help you to develop your program? And I think this is where the summary and planning report, which again you can see it at the website, noellevitz.com/second year, but that summary and planning report really provides a nice planning document for some of these discussions on campus to help you prioritize. Tracy, do you have some additional questions in the queue here for us?
There's a couple questions still queued up. The next question comes from Don Sparks, Corbin University. Your line is now open.
Hi, I have another career services question for Fayetteville State. I just wanted to know what your total undergraduate population is and how many, or what your staffing is in your career services office.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think we have about 5,500 undergraduates, and gosh, I don't have career services with me, but they've got at least, what, half a dozen people, I would say, in that office?
Yes, career services has at least one counselor that works with each of the classes, the freshmen, the sophomores, the juniors, and the seniors, and they take on other responsibilities as well, such as internships and having career fairs. So there are several other jobs that they do in addition to being the counselor for each of the classes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Again, ask a star then one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Terrence Parker of Texas State University. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone. My question is, do you currently do any special outreach or intervention for second-year students who are on academic probation?
Absolutely. This is John Brooks at Fayetteville State. Our Students of Promise program is one example of that. Actually, these are students who are more than on probation. These are students who are profoundly at risk, to the point that they would not be able to return if they had not agreed to this program. So that's one part for the students who are at risk. The major part of this, though, has been working with advisors, first of all, to make them aware of which of their students are on probation, and then second of all, to ensure that they are communicating with those students on a regular basis. Students on probation are required to do an online academic success plan, which we have made available through another product that And so they have access to that online, and advisors have access to the academic success plan, and they can also track the progress of their students in completing those. So we've got, you know, some targeted interventions for really at-risk students. We've got some more general interventions in place that you make use of existing advisors, but try to ensure that there's communication, because the problem is that the students who are most at risk are least likely to seek the services that they need, and so we try to nudge them through our communication efforts and intervention by both University College and major advisors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the good question. Helpful response here.
There are no further questions queued up at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, Tracy, thank you for your help as it relates to orchestrating this. And certainly we appreciate everyone. And Joe, if you can take back the get us back to the slides. I'm afraid I scooted us in the wrong direction there with my mouse. Thank you so kindly. But I want to thank each and every one of you who've joined us this afternoon. And we certainly look forward to continuing this dialogue about student success, in particular a focus on those second-year students, and we can extend that and think about transfer students as well. I want to give a special thanks to our three colleagues at Fayetteville State University and our colleague at Tulane University. These colleagues have worked very hard the last several months with us in preparation for this, and we're honored that they shared their time, thought, and programs with us all today. If you have any questions, we're hoping to see you face-to-face at our national conference. We're going to be in Chicago this year, and if any of you want to join us at the client workshops, we have a client workshop for the Retention Management System Plus Suite, these motivational assessments and predictive modeling instruments. And we also have a client workshop for the Student Satisfaction Suite as well. So we would love to see you face-to-face at those workshops and at the National Conference on Student Recruitment, Marketing, and Retention thereafter. If you have any questions that come up as you're looking at the second-year student assessment and reports, or if you'd like more case studies, if this has kind of whet your appetite, don't hesitate to give us a call. We hope to be of service and certainly share the same desire with you to serve these second-year students. Best wishes to each of you, and I hope you have a good afternoon.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.